In this next case, it's about a software company that is having trouble growing. And what I want you to pay attention to in this particular example is I would consider this case probably, I give it a C grade or perhaps at best a B minus grade, and basically would not have passed this person on to the following round. And there were probably three major mistakes that this person made. So let me point out what they are, and I want you to listen for them and notice it as you hear it. And this way you can kind of know what to expect and not get overly confused. The first thing is the candidate actually did get the right answer. So the end conclusion on the case, if I recall correctly, was actually correct. And the reason I would not pass this person to the next round is not that they got the incorrect answer, but rather how they got the correct answer was not appropriate, which leads me to basically they didn't follow a process that was systematic. They basically got a little lucky. The second thing you'll notice is notice the questions that the candidate asks. The candidate jumps around from one idea to an unrelated idea to yet another unrelated idea. And so it's very hard to follow. And so rather than letting data and analysis drive what's the next question you ask, which is what you're supposed to do, this candidate was basically using intuition to guess at what the answer might be or could be. And the motivation for asking a particular question was really just they got an idea, right? And in a consultant's case, you want to not just have an idea, but you want the ideas to come from and come out of the data. The third thing to notice is you'll notice that in a lot of the questions the person asked, I would mention certain pieces of information that were actually quite important. And the candidate actually glossed over that information and did not ask any follow-up questions. Now, this is important because when you do a case, the frameworks are meant to really help reveal insightful information that can further refine your hypothesis. And the idea is you use the framework to start a case until you find that new insightful piece of information. And then oftentimes you'll deviate from the framework to use a more appropriate problem-solving approach or an issue tree to resolve a particular issue once you've discovered it. So in this particular case, the candidate was mechanically going through the framework and really just glossed over this insightful information that was revealed through his questioning. So those three things. Notice how he gets sort of lucky on his getting the final answer correct without using a systematic process. The second thing to notice is jumping around a lot, which is very confusing. And then the third is not really asking enough follow-up questions on specific insightful information that was revealed in the case. So those are the three major issues. And let me give you some context as to why this is important from an interviewer standpoint. You see, clients are very good at understanding their business. They have a very good feel, intuitive grasp of what's going on in your business. And so they don't need consultants to give them new ideas. Where consultants can often add value is by quantifying the ideas the clients already have, right? So if they're debating between options A and B, they don't need a consultant to say option A and B, those are good options. They need a consultant to say option A would produce this kind of income, option B would produce this kind of income, or option A would require this specific amount of cost, option B would require this amount of specific cost. So a big part of the consulting value for clients is quantifying numerically a particular option or idea that a client has. So that's why it's not good enough to just get the answer right. You have to get the answer right in a very particular way that is useful to clients. And that whole process, I think, is very, very important. So with that, let's go ahead and listen to this particular case, which again, I would say is probably a C plus or perhaps a B minus case at best, and listen for these three mistakes: the unstructured nature of the question asking and how the person got a little lucky by the end, jumping around a lot, and then not asking follow-up questions when insightful information was revealed by the interviewer in the case. The company, the case I'm about to give you comes from many years ago. So whatever you think you might know about modern day life, you can't assume it's true. Okay. So this is from maybe a few years ago, we'll call it 5, 10, 15 years, I'm not sure exact time frame. This company is a software company. They produce a software that's actually really a service that's delivered via the internet. And the service is one that allows website owners and large companies to really analyze and track what's going on their website for the purposes of figuring out who's doing what and how to make more money online. And this company's business has been has stopped growing. It's been growing very quickly the past couple of years, but this year in particular, it's been flat. And the CEO, here's your this great management consultant, and would ask you to help them out and figure out, how do I get this company growing again? And so go ahead and take it away.
Okay.
Actually, one other thing I forgot to mention. Since we're on the phone, if you plan to write anything or draw anything and you want me to do the same, just verbally say, you know, on the left-hand side, do this, right part of the page, write this word or whatever you want me to do so I can visually follow along, which would be a good idea.
Okay, sure. I have a couple of clarifying questions, if you don't mind.
Sure.
So if I understand this correctly, this company, we're going 10, 15 years back. They provide an internet service that basically provides sort of website analytics to let the customer know what's going on their website and has recently stopped growing.
Correct.
Okay, and is growth measured in revenue or number of customers?
Both, actually.
May I have a moment to sort of collect my thoughts?
Sure, of course.
Okay, so I think the approach I would like to take is sort of start off by looking at who they are selling the product to and how that has changed between the time when they were growing and now. And then next, look at the competition and see if growth problem is confined to this company or is it sort of an industry problem. And then move on to understanding more about how their product is different than their competitors and what their selling point is. Does that sound like a reasonable approach?
Sure.
Okay. So I'll start off with the customers. Is there a particular type of website they cater to in terms of size or industry?
Yeah, actually, this company sells to two different kinds of customers. They sell to small businesses as well as to Fortune 500, you know, very big companies. So we'll call them Fortune 2000.
Right? Okay. So are they selling the exact same product, or do they have differentiated product for small business versus
the company? The core service is the same, but the Fortune 500 websites, you know, they're bigger, they have much more traffic, so they do charge more for the bigger websites, and that tends to be larger companies.
Okay. So do we know who the biggest type of customer is, the breakdown between a small business and Fortune 500?
We don't have any more detail on that. Those are just the two major categories of business that they track.
Okay. So in terms of their competition, has the entire industry been slowing down growth, or is it confined to this company?
Actually, there's very little information. This is the company that pioneered the industry, so there really isn't a lot of data. There aren't really any competitors, and so there really isn't a lot of industry data.
Okay. So does that mean they don't have very many competitors?
They don't have any competitors. The only competitors they have, sometimes big companies will custom create their own software to do this functionality, but generally it's a very, very new industry with not a lot of information, unfortunately.
Okay. And I would like to look at the cost involved in developing this product. Do we have any breakdown of that?
The cost in the R&D costs?
Yeah.
Or the operating costs?
Can we start with the R&D costs?
Okay, I'm going to do a quick timeout here and ask you a pop quiz question. What is the problem we're trying to solve with this case? What is the problem the client has asked us to solve in this case? So I'm going to pause for a second. If you can say it out loud as you're listening to this, what is the problem we're trying to solve for this case? If you recall, the problem is that the client has flat sales and is trying to figure out how to grow sales again. And so it begs the question of why this candidate is asking about costs, you know, R&D costs. It's sort of random. It seems unrelated. It seems unnecessary, and I think the better response in this particular case would be one of two things. Either to not really ask questions about costs at all, because arguably they're not important or not relevant for growing sales, or if this candidate has a hypothesis that perhaps, you know, if R&D costs are really low or high, then perhaps, you know, big companies would, you know, make their own custom software rather than buy it. You know, if the candidate has some sort of hypothesis like that, it would be better to state and refine the hypothesis, indicate what data you need, and then if cost falls into that, then that's appropriate. And perhaps the hypothesis is wrong, which is fine. It's not a big deal. You don't get hurt in a case interview if your hypothesis is incorrect. You do get hurt if you don't actually state the hypothesis. You do get hurt in terms of your performance on a case if you don't ask for the right information to test your hypothesis. So in this particular case, this candidate started asking about R&D costs that, in my view, weren't relevant. And second, did not indicate that, you know, he was going after a new hypothesis. So I could not really figure out why the candidate was asking about costs, and he didn't bother explaining it. So I think this is a mistake, and would encourage you not to make the same mistake when you do a case. Sure, R&D. Took about, let's call it $2 million to fund the R&D. Most of that has been incurred and has been paid for. And the ongoing costs are, you know, really not that expensive. And there's some ongoing R&D, which let's say, we'll say it runs maybe $200,000 a year for this very small company. And then we have technology costs, which is maybe another $200,000 a year.
Okay. So they've already paid for much of the R&D and they're more focused on selling the product now instead of...
Yeah, that's a fair... Yeah, let's assume that's the case.
Okay. And what about the operating costs for running a company?
So as I mentioned, the ongoing costs, we'll call $200,000 for technology, $200,000 for the R&D team to maintain the system. And let's say they have another, let's call it $3 million a year in overhead in terms of mostly staff, mostly sales and marketing and customer service.
Okay. And have these costs changed recently between the time we were growing and now?
The costs have remained fairly constant.
Okay. Okay, so I'm thinking since the costs have remained fairly constant and they're not getting any more profit, it seems to be that they're not bringing in any more customers or they're getting the same amount of new customers as they're losing old customers. So can we maybe take a look at how they're getting their revenue, how they're charging the customers? Is it a one-time fee or is it sort of a monthly license fee?
So notice now that the candidate is switching away from the cost analysis back to the revenue side. And so now it wants to look more around revenues. And that's important because it's the right area to go. Unfortunately, we've lost, you know, 2, 3, or 4 minutes in analyzing cost. Now, that's not necessarily a deal breaker. It doesn't have to necessarily ruin a whole case, but it does take up time. And in a lot of cases, you need the full 30, 40 minutes to solve the whole case, assuming you don't go after down any paths that are really unnecessary. So again, it's just it's a bad habit. It's an unnecessary use of time and something I would caution you against. It's a monthly subscription fee. So kind of like the utility company, you just pay it every month.
Okay. So the customers have the option of opting out every month?
Yeah, that's true.
And do we have any data on the customers that have remained on board versus new customers and the ones that are losing?
Yeah, I would say that the customers that are canceling skews very heavily towards small businesses. And, okay. And in the company's history, a Fortune 500 client has never canceled.
Do we know the reasons why small businesses are canceling?
Yes, the feedback indicates that they don't feel the software provides a return on investment for them.
Okay, so they're feeling the software is, I guess, costing them more to buy from them than it's saving them money?
Correct, and mostly the role of the software is to increase sales online. And okay. So those who cancel, they feel that it's not increasing sales at all or enough to justify the cost.
And these small businesses, once they cancel their subscription, are they developing their own product?
No, they're not.
Okay. And I would like to understand the product a little better. You say it helps increase the sales online, mm-hmm. and it does this just by providing feedback to the subscribers on how the website's doing?
Yeah, so it provides feedback on what customers or visitors on the websites are doing. If they're not going to the pages of the website that help produce revenue, either buying something or, in other cases, filling out a form to request more information, which might lead to a sale offline. And it really helps them figure out how do you funnel people to the most profitable parts of the website and gives them that feedback in terms of what they need to do differently to make that happen better.
Okay. Well, those sound like pretty useful features for a website to have. And I find it interesting that the small businesses aren't finding the return on investment. Do we know if it's a pricing problem or are they having quality issues and performance issues with this product?
The performance issues don't seem to be any issues. The software works as advertised.
Okay. So in terms of pricing, do they feel it's too expensive for them to maintain?
The small business customers, you mean?
Yes.
Well, factually speaking, they pay $50 a month.
So they pay $50?
$50 a month.
Okay. So the pricing is basically broken down to when they first buy the software and then just continually $50 a month?
Actually, it's only just $50 a month. There's no upfront fee.
Oh, just $50 a month. For the small customers, does the company dedicate less resources to customer service than they do to the Fortune 500?
Actually, they devote more.
They devote more? Okay. Is there a reason for this? Because it seems like a small business wouldn't require as much attention as a large Fortune 500 customer.
The historical reason has been that they're more small business customers, so they've allocated more people to support them.
When you say the company dedicates more service representatives to small businesses, do you mean when you add up all the number of representatives in the small business segment, there's more, or there's more per customer, per small business, compared to a large company?
In terms of number of users, I would say a Fortune 500 company have more users, but in terms of number of accounts, the company has more small business accounts than Fortune 500 accounts.
Okay. So if I'm understanding this properly, is this company more focused on Fortune 500 than small businesses then?
This company is more focused on small business than Fortune 500.
Oh, small business. Okay. And do we know the growth rates for each of these customer segments?
So here, I mentioned that the company is more focused on selling to small business customers than the Fortune 500. And the candidate, through his voice inflection and reaction, you know, thinks this is interesting. What the candidate did not do was ask, well, what percentage of the business is focused on small business versus Fortune 500? So I mentioned previously that we need to quantify interesting observations and trends. So it's not good enough to say, okay, this company is mostly focused on small business. Are we talking 51% of sales? Are we talking 95% of sales, or something in between? So it's useful to get that level of precision. It doesn't need to be to like the fifth decimal point or anything like that, but it is a good habit to start asking for approximate numbers just to get a better feel for a particular pattern you're seeing emerge in a particular case. No, we don't. Industry's too new. There's no hard data on that. We'll say that the proportion or mix between the two within the company, I would say, is a small business segment has been shrinking a little, and the Fortune 500 segment has been growing a little in terms of number of accounts within the company.
Okay. Okay, so it seems the company is losing small business accounts and sort of making up a little bit of that on the Fortune 500 accounts, and the total growth rate is pretty flat as a result of that. Is that correct?
Yes.
So how does this company go about acquiring new customers?
A lot through publicity and word of mouth, because it's such a new company and really one of the pioneers in this particular industry. They get written up a lot. It's in the news in terms of the internet publications, and people end up finding their way to them typically.
And just to confirm, you said there was no data on the revenue, correct?
Data on which?
On the revenue, how it's been growing or changing?
Oh, we have data on revenue. Revenue overall for the company, again, has been flat. Revenue from small businesses has maybe declined 5 or 10%, and revenue from the Fortune 500 has grown by a comparable percentage, typically about 5 to 10% over the past year.
Okay. Okay, so it seems to me the problem lies in the small business segment of customers since it has been declining, and I would like to sort of break that problem down a bit and see why that is.
Okay.
I guess have small business, I guess the category in general, has their profits been declining in recent years? That's corresponded to the stop and growth for our company.
So in this particular case, the candidate has tried to synthesize what he's discovered so far in the case, which is a good thing to do and a good habit to have. But the conclusion that was derived and stated was, I think, a little bit on the weak side. So the candidate said, it seems like the problem lies in the small business segment of customers, which is actually, in fact, true. And that the candidate says they want to break down the problem a bit and see why that's happening. Now, the problem with this conclusion, the reason it's weak, is the candidate is not actually citing specific data. You know, a better answer would be, since a small businesses comprise 90% or 95% of revenues and they're not buying, it seems like the majority of the problem is in the small business segments, and we need to analyze, you know, why sales are not growing in that particular segment. So the answer I gave includes data. It cites specific facts, and that's something that this particular candidate did not do. The second problem with this transition is that the candidate did make an attempt to synthesize and to create a interim conclusion, which again is good. It'd be better if the person had used some facts. And as the candidate transitions to a new set of analysis to figure out and analyze this more specific problem of why are the small business customers not buying, there was no setup of a framework or no issue tree, no list of the two or three major areas and pieces of data you would need to figure that out. So for example, I might say, since 90% of the revenues come out of the small business segment, or 90% or so, it seems like if we can solve and turn around the flat revenues in the small business segment, we can solve this problem. Therefore, I would like to analyze the small business segment in more detail, and specifically, I'd like to look at total revenues of that segment, the prices we're charging that segment, and the volume or number of clients we have in that segment to figure out why sales are now flat. So that's an example of a framework, sort of a twist on the profitability framework. It can also be set up as an issue tree, which basically indicates the key pieces of information you need to determine the outcome of a particular analysis. But whenever you make this kind of transition, you want to synthesize and conclude strongly based on hard data, and then you want to indicate where you're intending to go and what data you need to test the hypothesis that you now have, which is this problem is really a small business segment problem. So that habit is a good habit to get into, and this candidate did not do that, which I think was a mistake and actually did hurt in the overall performance of the case interview. I would say for the small business customers, their revenues online have been fairly flat.
Okay. What about their costs?
Overall, we don't have any data on that.
Okay. And when the small business customers cancel their accounts, what sort of feedback are they providing to our client?
The feedback really is that the software is not successful.
Is it helping?
The feedback is that the software is not helping them make more money, and it's not increasing their website visits at all.
Okay. Okay, so right now it seems that the small businesses, that their revenues aren't growing in recent years, and perhaps there is a result of that. They're feeling that this new software, because it is 10 or 15 years ago, online advertising isn't that big yet, and it's not helping them grow their revenue at all. And is there, I guess, information on how they can improve this product to make it more friendly to these small businesses?
Here is an example of the candidate actually glossing over and missing an important piece of new information. You'll notice earlier I said that in response to the question of what do small business clients say when they cancel the software, what is the feedback? I said that the feedback from the clients was that the software is not helpful to them in making more money, and basically it's not increasing their website visits at all. And that's an important piece of information, because the product isn't designed to increase website visits. It's designed to make the existing website visitors more profitable. So there was a disconnect there that ideally the candidate should have picked up on and try to understand why that is the case. And the candidate missed it and therefore kept going down a particular path that ultimately did not end up being particularly useful. So it's important, as you're asking these questions, to actually very carefully listen to the answers to figure out if there's some piece of either new information, and especially if there's some information that's counterintuitive or unexpected. Whenever you get that, you need to take a time out, pause for a second, and try to really fully understand the implications and ramifications of that new piece of information. And that's something that this candidate did not do. There doesn't seem to be much information on that.
Okay. I'll be honest, I'm sort of stuck here. I'm not sure which part to look into next.
Okay, so let's do this. We'll do a little debrief, and I'll give you some direction, and we can take another crack at it. Is that fair?
Okay, sure.
So I was a little confused. You started off on sort of what I would term the business situation framework, you know, the customers, competitors, and products. And then you sort of jumped into costs, and then you jumped into revenue. Give me some sense of what you were thinking and why you made that switch fairly early in the process.
Well, when I started with the business situation framework, I believe you started with competition. And you mentioned that there's the small business and Fortune 500, the competition. And you mentioned there was really no competitors for this company and no sort of data on the segmenting due to the lack of competitors. And also, the only customer segments are the small business and Fortune 500, and we didn't really have any data on that. And since there's no competition, there really isn't a product differentiation or substitute that the customers can use. So I thought the lack of growth could have been possibly an increase in cost that's offsetting the increase in revenue for this company.
Okay.
So that's why I sort of jumped into the cost there.
Okay. So this is very important. I think sort of two areas where I think you can focus more on, which I think will be very helpful overall. Number one is get really good clarity on what the question is.
Mm-hmm.
And the question was growth, and particularly on the revenue side. And so cost is not as big of a consideration if the client doesn't care about cost, right?
Okay.
So if it's revenue, you focus on growth, basically price and volume shipments. If it's profitability, then you have to worry about cost. Mm-hmm. So it's useful to clarify which issue to focus on. And make sure you're clear on that. The second is whenever you do the business situation framework, and I think I probably would teach a little differently today than when I did it originally. I generally recommend if you are using the business situation from the starting point of a case that you start with the customer first. If you're using the business situation framework in the middle of a case where you already have a hypothesis, then you might cherry pick certain parts and just to analyze a very specific part of the business using that approach. Mm-hmm. Since you decided to, and by the way, you can solve this case in a variety of different ways, all of which are effective and would count as good. But since you started with the business situation framework and it was the first framework we used and you really have no information, you really need to get a lot more data on the customers. And the questions you asked were way too superficial.
Okay.
So let me ask you a question. So I'll give you a couple examples of this. So number one, what are the annual revenues of this company?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know?
No.
Oh, okay. How many customers do they have?
Yeah, I guess I didn't ask that. I thought they would be broken down by the small business Fortune 500, but I thought we didn't have any data on that.
You didn't ask for the data. So here's a general rule of thumb. If you ask, you get. If you ask too vaguely, you only get what you ask for.
Okay.
I see. All right. And so you have to be very careful. I think if you ask a very general question like, how do you solve this case, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to give you the answer. If you ask for, I'd like to know more about the customers, right? Then my usual response is, well, what specifically would you like to know? So it's like, if you watch any of this for the lawyer shows, it's like a cross-examination from a lawyer on the stand. You know, as a witness, you don't volunteer any information. You answer every question honestly, but you don't volunteer anything unless you're asked specifically.
Right.
You kind of got to assume that a little bit. And if you're pretty close and you're asking the right category of questions, like, no, I'll volunteer a little bit, but I want to make sure that you thought of to ask the right question because that's an important skill. And then if you did ask the right question, but you ask it in the wrong way, you know, I'll give you the information anyway. But if you ask too generally, then I don't know if you were even aware of what the right question was. And therefore, I don't want to give you I don't want to volunteer an answer to a question you never asked. So that's the reason we do that.
Okay.
So why don't we start over, take another crack at it. And if you want to use the business situation framework, that's fine. But you definitely need to do a much better job on the customer side. And before you move on, particularly early in a case, you got to really feel like you could answer any question you know, not every question, but you feel like you really understand these customers really well.
Okay.
And I don't think you knew that.
Yeah.
When you got stuck. So let's start over. So I'll kind of do an abbreviated introduction. This is a software company. They do online website tracking software from many years ago. They sell to Fortune 500 companies and small businesses. And the question the CEO is asking is, how do you help me grow this business? And in particular, how do you help me grow the sales?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I think I'll take your suggestion, perhaps start off this time with the customers in mind.
Okay.
So, like you said before, the customers are Fortune 500 as well as small businesses. And I guess since we do want to grow in sales, do we have the amount of revenue from these customers, the total, and perhaps the split if we have it?
Sure. Revenues overall for the company runs about $110,000 in revenue per month, with $100,000 coming out of small business and $10,000 coming out of the Fortune 500.
Okay, so $100,000 small and $10,000 out of the Fortune 500?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you mentioned before this has changed over the past couple of years. The small business has still been declining 5 to 10%, and Fortune 500 has been increasing a bit.
Yeah, in terms of total revenues, let's say that small business has been shrinking 5 to 10%, and Fortune 500 accounts have been growing by the 5 to 10%.
Okay. So the next thing I'm interested in knowing is if there's a single large customer that's commanding most of the demand from this company. So do we have any data on perhaps its top 10 customers or just number of customers there are?
Yeah. In the small business segment, there are currently, 2,000 customers. And in the Fortune 500 segment, there are 10.
There are 10, okay. And for the small businesses, do we have the breakdown between these customers? Is there a sort of one that pops out that's controlling a lot of the revenue for this company?
No, they're all similarly sized in terms of what they pay to the company. The average revenue per customer for small businesses is about $50, and there's not a lot of variation. $50 per month, and there's not a lot of variation in that pricing for that particular type of customer.
Okay, so you mentioned that there for the small businesses, it's about $100,000 revenue with 2,000 customers.
Yes.
So that's about $500 per customer for small businesses and $1,000 per customer for Fortune 500s. Do we know why there's a discrepancy between the amount that's being paid out?
Yes, that's a good question. Yes, the Fortune 500 websites are much bigger, and the pricing models are geared somewhat along usage, and the Fortune 500 companies just have a lot more visitors on the website, and therefore they have to pay more.
Okay. So are they getting more features by paying more?
No, just simply more capacity, I guess, is probably the best way to say that.
Okay, I see. Okay, so from what it looks like, this company is highly dependent on its small business customers. Does it have any sort of program to help retain these customers, such as, I guess, longer contracts and discounts, or something along those lines?
Now, you'll notice here that the candidate is really kind of guessing a little bit. I think the person has an intuitive sense of what's going on, but the way they're asking questions is very hard to follow. So, for example, what is the hypothesis that the candidate is trying to test? Where getting information about a retention program would be useful. If there's a new hypothesis, what is the new hypothesis? what is the issue tree or the key pieces of information this candidate needs to address the new hypothesis and to test whether it's true or not? What is the interim conclusion that we've learned so far? So right now, at this point, the candidate really, I think, is not clear on what to do next, and is basically guessing and taking stabs in the dark and trying to hopefully get a little lucky. And you'll find out later as the case wraps up, they actually did get lucky. They did sort of figure out the core issue, but it was in such a random way that it was very hard to follow and very difficult from an interviewer standpoint to have the confidence that this candidate could solve the next case or a real case with a client when you're not there to watch and oversee them. And that's always what's happening in the back of the interviewer's mind is not just did you do well in the case, but will you do well if I put you on a plane to Cleveland, Ohio, which I did, was put on a plane to Cleveland, Ohio, and by yourself for a month with a client on your first or second week at work, and will they be okay? You know, will they be able to like figure this stuff out? Or were they just really lucky in getting the right answer, or did they follow a systematic process that would consistently get them to the right answer eventually? And so in this particular case, the candidate just asking random questions. And so my confidence as an interviewer is, you know, he might have gotten the right answer by the end of this, which he did, but geez, could he do it again? I really have my doubts. And so that's why I did not end up giving him a pass on to the next round. Actually, all the contracts are month to month, and they don't currently have any sort of active program around what you described.
Okay, so these small businesses in general, you said they're spread across all industries, correct? There's no one big segment that there is?
That's true. Fairly diversified.
And are the lost accounts coming from pretty much across the board as well?
Actually, all of the lost accounts are coming out of the small business segment.
Do we have any information on the typical revenue for one of these small business customers?
Let's say overall revenues, maybe $100,000. Online revenues, zero.
Okay, so these small businesses are basically making no money with their online advertising.
That's correct.
Okay, since we give them the software for analyzing the website, do we know if there's been a huge change in traffic the past few years?
Traffic to whom?
Traffic to the customer's website.
Actually, there's been, the company actually does have some data on that, and there has not been that much change in traffic. And nor is the software designed to increase traffic. It's simply designed to analyze the existing traffic.
So just to confirm, there's been no change in traffic between when our client was growing, between now when the growth is stagnant in terms of the small business website?
The way it works is that this software is designed to take whatever traffic you already have and help you make more money from the traffic you already got.
Okay.
And they have noticed that in the small business segment, the small business websites have not seen much increase in traffic.
Okay. Since there's nothing really software can do to help the website increase traffic, it can only work with what these companies have. I guess that's the small business company's justification for not continuing to use this product?
Yeah.
Okay. So looking at the Fortune 500 companies, do we have a breakdown between their online revenue and their perhaps more traditional channels of revenue?
Yeah, most of these companies, they do $4 billion a year in sales. Online revenues are probably, at this point, probably around $4
million. Okay, so it seems that the Fortune 500 companies are at least getting some money out of their online channel. And could this be related to them having more resources to bring in traffic, doing the marketing, and then making the website?
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement.
Okay. So there's more traffic for our client's software to work with to help them come up with more interesting and informative numbers than perhaps small businesses would get.
Yes.
Okay. I believe that's enough information that I have on the customers to make some decisions. Are there any areas you feel we should still cover?
Up to you.
Okay. I think we're good to go here.
Okay.
Okay. So just before I guess to sort of make any conclusions here, I would like to know a little bit more about the product.
Okay.
Does the company have any plans to make any drastic changes to their product in the near future, perhaps a new introduction, or are they just sort of sticking with it and trying to grow their current business?
No major changes to the product or plant.
So here we are in the midst of the business situation framework, and the candidate is about to make a conclusion. And before they make a conclusion, they actually jump back to the product section of the situation framework. And it's not exactly clear why. You know, is there a new hypothesis that they need another piece of information? Did they forget to ask something and they want to come back for a second? If that's the case, the candidate ought to say that. And so, again, it's just very, very hard to follow.
Okay, and let's just briefly jump back to customers, if you don't mind.
Sure.
So now we're jumping yet again, this time from products to customers. And I was originally thinking that we were going to have a conclusion here. And so you notice that this, again, is very confusing. The candidate's simply jumping around and around and around. And what this really is, it's a symptom of a candidate that doesn't really have a hypothesis. They are coming up with ideas, and rather than having a hypothesis and systematically testing it with data, they're coming up with an idea and then trying to ask and guess, you know, is this it? Is this it? You know, is this it? And that's what it feels like on the receiving side as an interviewer when a candidate is jumping around all the time and they're not following a systematic approach. Is they're just intuitively guessing and trying to figure out if their pet idea is correct or not, rather than having a testable hypothesis that can objectively be verified with data, which is the preferred approach, particularly in case interviews.
In terms of how they acquire these customers, is it much more difficult to acquire a large customer than compared to a small business in their past experience?
Actually, not really. Right now, most of the big customers, they're calling in, asking to buy, and then they got to find someone who's around to take the phone call, and basically they'll sign them up.
And our client, they currently have enough capacity in terms of their staff to handle all of this?
Not really. They really don't have a sales force devoted to the Fortune 500 accounts.
Okay. So they do have one devoted to small business?
Most of the small businesses, they buy online. So there's no sales force either, but there is a mechanism to buy online, but big companies don't like to buy online.
Okay. I think I have enough information to make a preliminary conclusion recommendation.
Okay, sure.
Based on the information you gave, our client's current core business is in smaller companies and not Fortune 500s. However, the profits have been revenue has been declining because the small business segment is shrinking and Fortune 500s are expanding. So based on those, I would recommend that the client focus on the Fortune 500 customers a bit more
and
capture that growth, because for the Fortune 500 customers, they're getting $1,000 per customer versus only half of that for small business. It is a growing segment, and the Fortune 500s have the ability themselves to do the marketing and bring in the traffic to the websites, which then the software can take advantage of and analyze and bring benefits to our clients' customers. And the second course of action is perhaps for our clients to consider helping the small businesses bring in more traffic. I know this is not their core business, but perhaps if their company has some ability to help them with website design based on the analytics they provide, it can provide more attractive place for customers to come in, increasing traffic. And the last one would be to create a dedicated sales force to go out and push this product, so that plus the word of mouth you mentioned could perhaps bring in more customers and then generate more revenue for the future.
Okay, great.
Okay, yeah, I think those are what I got out of it.
Okay, great. Are you ready for a little debrief?
Yeah.
So here's my take. I think overall, I think the right conclusions, you came to the right conclusion. The process you took, though, I think was still, it wasn't as systematic as it could be.
Right.
But you kind of like, I just felt like the questions you were asking were, they felt a little random, like you kind of, not like you had
like
a serious,
roundabout.
Yeah, a little roundabout, a little random, and I felt like you kind of by chance got the right questions and got the right answer. When a candidate does that, I always wonder, if I were to leave them alone in a client situation by themselves for 2 weeks, are their skills good enough and consistent enough that they would systematically ask the right questions every single time and get the right information and come to the right conclusion? So it kind of felt like you stumbled upon the answers in this case, as opposed to you systematically like hunted down the right information.
Yeah, definitely. It stuck. Yeah, the way I asked the questions wasn't very convincing. That was a repeatable process.
Fair enough. So that's probably the main thing.
Okay.
And I think that generally the other thing to pay attention to is when you get an answer to a question that you asked, you got to have some sort of assessment as to whether that's the answer you were expecting. And if it wasn't something, it was a little surprising, it is worth trying to figure out why it was surprising to you.
Mm-hmm.
So an example of this is you asked what was the mix of people who cancel, right?
Yeah.
And I said it was always the small business clients that were canceling. And I think from your voice inflection, that was an interesting nugget of information, which it was intended to be. But you didn't ask, well, how many people are canceling?
Okay.
Right? So how big a problem is cancellations? And you did ask, why did they cancel, which was great. You kind of got to, how come the big companies don't cancel? You sort of inferred that. You could have just, you could just ask, why do the big companies not cancel? And then I would have given you information. So I think that when you get a new piece of information, it's worth stepping back for a second saying, okay, Is that unusual? If so, why? And what else do I, what does this prompt me to further ask?
Okay.
And when I find candidates who are really good at being very systematic, that's the way they do it. They start off much like you did, sort of, I have no idea what's going on. I'm just going to ask some basic questions, which is what the framework is useful for. And where they would differentiate, I would say, is when they get a couple of useful, interesting nuggets of information, they will chase those down to a logical conclusion rather than just keep asking questions, sort of in this
right.
Little bit haphazard way.